Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Many of you know that one of my phrases which I keep on mentioning, an important part of the Dhamma, is to understand the fault-finding mind and also to learn how to overcome that fault-finding mind. So I was going to do the first part of this talk and see what happens afterwards just on this fault-finding mind, because it causes so many problems for people. It starts off with fault-finding in the kitchen, fault-finding in this monastery or your monastery or someone else's monastery, fault-finding with the teacher, fault-finding with the heart, fault-finding with the weather, fault-finding with jhana grove, fault-finding with your husband, with your wife. There's no end to fault-finding. And you end up fault-finding with yourself. I'm hopeless, I'm terrible, this place is awful, I'm awful, I'm going to get out of here. And I'm going to get out of my own body, and just you get depressed and upset and all sorts of terrible things happen to you. And sometimes I've been sitting there listening to people fault-finding for years, listening to myself fault-finding, and just realizing that that is one of the most important things to notice, to become wise to. And as soon as you understand what it really is, just like much of Mala, once you understand it, it weakens and eventually just fades away. And so, you should know by now that all the fault-finding, it's not truth, it's not accurate, it's not Dhamma. All it is a mind of negativity, which actually goes around. And I was asking myself, where does that fault-finding mind come from? And it was just one little conversation which we had today. Look, you find fault with other people, with other monks, with other traditions, simply because when you put someone else down, you know, your ego gets higher. It's one way of raising yourself up, is to push other people down. And that's all it really does. He's hopeless, she's terrible, that's not really the Dhamma, they don't really know what they're talking about, which means when you've destroyed everybody else, you're the last person standing, so you're all right. It's just a way of just validating your sense of self. That's one of the first reasons why people criticize others. And all that criticism of others, as I learned when I was a kid, they used to say it says much more about the person who says bad things than about the person they're referring to. So if someone calls you, you know, a bad monk, an idiot, stupid, don't know the Dhamma, don't know the meditation, it says nothing about the person they're referring to. It says everything about you. And that's why me as a teacher, I can learn much more about your mind. Not by when you start in your interviews telling me all about the wonderful experiences you're having, but just, you know, the way you talk about other people. You know a person's restlessness by how much they talk. Don't need to tell you. You know a person's kindness by just their lack of fault-finding. That's actually how you understand. Remember the old story, my father, the door of my heart's open to you no matter what you do. That's Dhamma. You know that. You open the door up to everybody, which means you don't judge them. You've got no right to judge another person. How many times have people judged you and totally got it wrong? Happened to me just so often that, you know, I can't trust other people's judgments. And then I turn that back on myself. How can I judge any one of you? How can I know what you're going through? And just all the difficulties, maybe the health problems, other problems, difficulties which you're going through. There's no way I can know that. So how on earth can I ever sort of judge you and find fault with you? I used to say that it's just like, you know, because I was a school teacher, you're in a high school And of course, there's some kids know more than others. And it's not because they're better, it's just they've been in the system longer. So you can't say that one monk or one nun, one layman, or even the dog or the cat is better than anybody else. Some people have been in samsara longer. Give spot a chance. They'll get there sooner or later. Spot, by the way, is a cat in this monastery. So we don't sort of compare and judge. And that sort of judging, you can see that is the defilement of the mind. Now, you've all heard me saying, point out some of these teachings of the Buddha, which I never sort of was, never pointed out to me when I was training, when I was young. But, you know, when you start looking at the suttas, they're brilliant teachings. You know, the three conceits. I am better, I am worse, I am the same. And all those three are wrong view. Bad ideas. You don't get it. So anyone who comes along and say, I'm a better teacher than that guy, or I'm worse, I'm the worst meditator in this whole monastery, or, you know, no, we're all the same, then you just haven't understood the Dhamma. There's something you missed out. You're measuring, and from measuring comes this terrible fault finding. So, yeah, sometimes you get into that. A couple of days ago, I was going to check out, you know, Kuti number 2, see about the termite problem in there. And just, it was a nice little afternoon, had a walk around. I lived in that Kuti number 2. In fact, I built it for myself because it's supposed to be the second monk's hut, you know, when I first built it and lived in there. Had some really nice experiences in that hut. So I went back and looked upon the old walking meditation path. We had some great insights on that walking meditation path. A little bit of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. Some of you just come to this monastery. Sometimes I get nostalgia walking in this monastery. I remember 30 years ago this happened here. I remember 15 years ago something happened over there. It's really nice. And it was just a nice afternoon. Had a beautiful walk. And I walked back past some of the very scenic parts of this monastery. You know, the place where we keep all the building material. And just the wonderful, just, you know, the environmentally friendly workshop and where all the cars are kept. Our second-hand car yard, which we have just in the front where Manish used to live. And just the crumbling water tanks. And I was really pissing out. Just think, isn't it wonderful? You can go past some of those most beautiful parts of the monastery because they're neglected. Nobody loves them. You know, we always think, that's a terrible part. If you want to sort of enjoy yourself, go and watch, you know, some of the nice sunsets or go into the forest or go down by the lake where all the dead dogs are just buried. It's just more and more get down there. Anyway, anyone who lives down there, maybe at night time, at midnight, if you go down there, you can hear them all barking, woof woof, in the middle of the night, searching for a bone or something. I don't know. But anyway, because I wasn't measuring. I had this beautiful meditation, just not measuring, but so I could actually enjoy what other people would find fault with. And so it's so nice not to find fault. You can have happiness, bliss, peace in a place where you never expected it. And that's just like, you know, just living in any community, in living in harmony with one another. If you really wanted to, or if I wanted, I could find fault with all of you. Big faults. But do I ever do that? I ever taking you aside and say, I don't know if you come over here. Brahmali, it's about time I really let you know. You know, because honestly, Ajahn Brahmali, I can't see your faults. Because I just train myself out of finding fault with people. And that means you can have compassion and peace. And we were just talking recently about different ways of running monasteries. Have you ever noticed the monasteries where there are the control freaks in charge? That's where you find the fault finders. Because fault finding is what leads to control. Leads to business, leads to telling people off and changing them and ironing out their wrinkles, just getting their kinks out of their monastic practice. And many of you, because we've been talking about the different monasteries which we have around here, that is why people start controlling. Have you ever noticed that? Fault finding, control, all comes together. So it's wonderful if, as monks, novices, anagogues, we all have our little areas, to see if we can not find fault. If we don't find fault, things will go wrong. If you find fault, then they go wrong. You should learn by that by now. It's controlling, it's forcing, there's a lack of kindness there's a lack of peace. There's a lack of this beautiful sense that everybody is welcome. And this compassion, opening the door of your heart to all of the old second-hand cars which we get in this monastery. Anyone's got a second-hand old car? The door of our garage is open to you. All that really means is that we have this beautiful openness of spirit. Now you can see what that does. That creates much, number one, it takes away a lot of the problems which we have, the personal problems. But okay, people say, but you've got to fix things up because some of the things which people do and say are really over the top. And I always try and remember the teaching of the Buddha, the Arana Vibhanga Sutra of non-conflict. So anyone who has any conflict with yourself, with other people, with this teacher or that teaching, look at the Arana Vibhanga Sutta. And what is the teaching of non-conflict? First of all, you never ever criticize a person. You don't say, Ajahn Appi is a stupid fruit-eating maniac. You never say that, except just as an example, which is totally over the top. I don't agree with that, Ajahn Appi. But instead, sometimes you just teach the Dharma. You say, some people fruit's very good for them, some people not so good for them. And then you can see that doesn't really challenge people. It's not this personal jibe. You don't criticize the person. You just give the teachings. So please, wherever you are in your life, never ever say that this person is angry, this person is a control freak, this person's stupid. You just say, what stupidity is. Just teach the Dharma. You just say in the Vinaya, the way the Buddha set up the Sangha, that there was not supposed to be sort of a hierarchy or a head. Yes, there was respect for the seniors, but that all the decisions would be made out of respect for the seniors, but in a democratic, harmonious way. We talk with one another. And I like saying, they would meet in harmony, and they would always leave in harmony. And it's what happens in between. You can have your arguments and discussions, feel that you're safe to say what you need to say. And when you're all finished, then you leave in harmony. In other words, you find out, well, obviously, I'm in a minority here, that my view is not shared by everybody else. Oh, okay. But we never look down upon another person for not seeing the things which we see. We've got the thing about the, should we put some chemicals around Kuti number 2, or should we not put around number 2? It's right to the Sangha to decide. And if you get outvoted, please respect the Sangha, even if you totally disagree with you. If you think that this is not right, please don't be so hard and so dogmatic and so, I would say, extremist. You know, just remember just the kindness and the respect to the tradition. If it is wrong, yeah, we get the karma for it. But you know, we make that decision in peace and harmony, in respect that other people don't see the same as we see, but we're going to work in peace together. We open our heart to imperfection, but with harmony and peace. And this is actually just respect for our tradition. So we don't really need those leaders. And because, you know, we focus on non-fault finding, you can see that we can actually do this democratic thing without going away afterwards and say, that's really wrong, that's really stupid. You know, the majority is not really the best way to go. We should go to the people who've got the most certificates, the most experience, the most whatever. And you know that's just going to cause a lot of problems. So just this wonderful way of just being in peace and harmony together and just allowing there are things to be done which you don't agree with. And you all know the hall you're sitting in here. That story. You know, when I found fault with Ajahn Chakro, I didn't want this hall to be built this way at all. I had a big argument. That was stupid. That was the wrong thing to do. And so instead, you know, I went to him, asked forgiveness and said, I want to build it your way. And I am the builder of this hall. My name is on the building license of this hall. So if anything, if the roof caves in, I'm the one who gets sent to jail because it's a bad builder. It's me. And I did that 2 years of really hard work, doing something I didn't agree with. Now that is what, you know, is practice. And you don't find fault. It's just one way of doing it. I thought my way was better, still do. But I'm not going to find fault. This is good enough. It's good enough. It's worked really well over all these years. Got some good meditation in this place. Other people too. Served its purpose. Brilliant. Good enough. So not finding fault means you have contentment. And where are you ever going to find contentment in this world? To get everything fixed up first of all, get everything done your way, and fix up all these stupid other monks who don't know the Dhamma and teach the wrong method, is that the way? Of course, that just creates so much conflict. This is not the way of ending conflict, it's the way of making more conflict, finding fault with others. So, you know that, you know, different monks teach different things. And some monks don't agree with bhikkhuni ordination, some do. But that's no reason to disrespect those other monks. There's no reason to criticize them. Just for whatever reason they have, that's what they do. And you know, you try and be kind to them as best you possibly can. Now, this is a Ranavibhanga Sutta. You don't criticize a person. You criticize the idea. You know, and the idea, I can criticize that as far as I know. There's nothing wrong with bhikkhuni ordinations according to the Vinaya or according to the Dhamma, so let's do it. But you don't criticize a person and put them down. You can criticize anger or controlling or whatever, but don't criticize a person. That means that you're not a maker of conflict and divisions. And there are too many conflicts and divisions in the Sangha already. This is a harmonious monastery pretty much. One of the reasons is because, you know, we don't encourage finding fault with people. People come in as, you know, young anagarikas, visitors, novices. If you stay here long enough, that fault finding will be, hopefully, just disappear from you. Just like the old story of these little pebbles in the stream. When they first fall in the stream, they've got the sharp edges. But just because of the friction and the wearing away, you know, in the water, just after the years, these pebbles become really round and smooth with no rough edges anymore. All that rough edge is where you scrape one another, rub up against each other and scratch each other. All that tends to vanish after a while. Your fault-finding mind just disappears and instead we have a mind of respect, which is the opposite of fault-finding. And look, it's not hard, shouldn't be hard to find respect for everybody who comes into a monastery, even if they just come for the day. It's amazing just what you've done so far. You know, you've come a long way, every one of you. to actually to get here. You're trying your best. You know, some of you are really advanced in meditation, some of you can't meditate for your life. But, you know, you're getting there. I respect that. You know, you're trying to keep the precepts as best you possibly can. You know, you're giving up so much. So instead of finding fault with one another, just respect what a person has done, how much they're trying. And when you have that, amazing things happen. You find fault with another person, and they show you more of their faults. That's basic psychology. You respect them, and then they show you their beautiful side, their kind side. Don't you like to be respected? Don't your ideas, you know, need to actually be listened to and not to be put down? Don't your sort of practices and ways of looking at Buddhism, don't they deserve sort of, you know, value? So when you put someone down and argue, you're just taking away all the value and it just causes a lot of conflict. That's why one of the jokes which I made, there's a few jokes I made, and I saw this on the internet as a joke, and it was, you know, it was the old story, the two monks arguing. Flag. Is the flag moving or is the wind moving? And they couldn't decide. They went to see the Zen master, and the Zen master said, you're both wrong, your mind was moving. That's as far as the story went when I heard it. And I added the punchline, then they went to see the real master, not the Zen monk, but the Theravada monk. Always like to outdo the opposition. I shouldn't say that. I've just been talking about lack of fault finding. I've just done it. Anyway, yeah. It's only a joke. And when you see the Theravada monk and the Theravada monk, all three of you are wrong. Your mouths were moving. Ha ha ha. But actually, I saw it in a joke in the internet someone sent me. And so it was mine. I invented that. So I take credit and blame for those things. So, anyway, the other joke which I did, just, you know, that's what, you know, you've all heard it before about, you know, the meditation, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the refugee goes to work, doesn't get paid, only gets paid on Friday. And so he tells his wife, from now on, I'm only going to work on Fridays. So that's going around too. It's a funny story, but I meant it actually to describe, just you can't always have a good meditation. Actually, what do you mean you can't always have a good meditation? That's one of the sayings I remember from that first meditation master, which I had, the one we shared with Bernard Kahn, the professor who was here. He went to the same meditation teachings under this man. And he said some very wise things. He said, there is no such thing as a bad meditation. And it's the sort of thing you don't expect. You know, when you're into fault finding and grading and this is better than that and measuring, especially as a scientist. What do you mean? That's a crazy thing to say, because sometimes you fall asleep, sometimes you snore, that's a bad meditation. Sometimes you have fantasies, you have ill will, other times you're really peaceful. What do you mean there's no such thing as a bad meditation? As soon as you get into this idea of a bad meditation and you judge it, what does that do to you? As soon as you stop labeling it as a bad meditation, it's just path of the course. It's just, you know, causes and conditions. It's just the whole process doing its thing. It's nothing to do with you. Who's there to say it's a good or bad meditation? You know, you're restless because you've been doing stuff. You're tired because you may have a sickness. You know, all these fantasies, it's just because, you know, these things are just from the past. You've just got to sometimes just let them do their stuff and leave it alone. Go. Let it wear itself out sometimes. So at least, you know, instead of saying it's good or it's bad, you know, we'd learn from it. Find out where it comes from, why it's here. But as soon as we judge it, you know, we have all this ill will towards it, we actually feed the defilements when we say bad meditation. So it's wonderful when you're content with every meditation. This is good enough. Which is the opposite of fault finding. It's good enough. And of course you know that I've used that as a mantra in meditation for so many years. Sitting there in my cave, and you're tired. This is good enough. Tired. Nothing to do with me. It's good enough. At least I'm meditating, I'm not doing anything unwholesome. It's good enough. You know, sometimes you get into these really deep states of meditation, no limiters. Oh, this is good enough. Don't judge and measure, because that's measuring. You know, it causes conceit. As I was saying last week, it's just when you put the I there somewhere, you know, and you start, as soon as you've got an I there, a me, an Ajahn Brahm, you start measuring good, bad, and you start finding fault. As I said last week, imagine you're the Buddha, you just don't find fault. Because it's beautiful compassion. You're an arahat, fully enlightened. No, it's just whatever arises passes away. Yankiji Samudya Dhamma, whatever is the nature to arise is the nature to cease. And all it is suffering arising, suffering passing away. So what is the problem? That's all there is. Dukkha arising and dukkha passing. It wasn't mean a bad meditation, it's just dukkha arising, dukkha passing. Where does all this come from? All comes from a sense of self. Once it's a sense of self, it's a sense of fault finding. So if actually you overcome the sense of fault finding, you find, you know, your ego diminishes. Your sense of identity starts to fade away. Because you refuse to measure and find fault with things. And the more you disappear, just the more happy you are. And so, you know, when I just walking through past the second-hand car yard, the recycling building equipment place, when you're walking past that, I was just so happy. Simply because, you know, you weren't fault-finding, you weren't judging, it's good enough. You're at peace, and, you know, sense of self just vanishes, you're just part of nature. Instead of being this one who has to fix things up all the time. Remember, we're part of the planet. We're not sort of custodians of it. No, we're part of it. We're nature too. And if we get extinguished, it's just nature, just balancing the books. So this is just the nature of things. So when you're at peace with things, you don't mess things up so much. So when you're meditating, it's not a bad meditation, not a good meditation, it's just meditation, that's all. It's good enough. And when you are content, then you become happy. You bliss out. And when you bliss out, all these things which people try and get in meditation, and they just aim for, and they hope for, and they think it's impossible, they say, oh, Ajahn Brahm, you were just born that way, you can sit in your cave and bliss out. Oh, we all have to work hard, it's really unfair, all your talks really don't make any sense because I don't hear any of this and I just get so upset and feel I'm a failure that I can't do this and I've been here for such a long time. Look, that is a fault-finding mind. It's not why I give these talks. So you put aside the fault-finding mind, just develop this wonderful sense, this is good enough, be content. The people you live with, they're not the best, but they're good enough. And even the dragon ladies, yeah, they're not the best, but they're good enough. It's your karma, you deserve her. You're stuck. So, learn to respect the beauty and the goodness and the sacrifice and everything else in them. That's why I could stay with very difficult people when I was young, as a monk. Stay with them because you saw their good side. And sometimes other people couldn't. But I trained that way, I opened the door of my heart to people. I opened the door of my heart to a monastery. I opened the door of my heart to sickness. I opened the door of my heart to a sort of a mind which didn't really want to meditate. You let it be. Don't find fault with it. Instead, you can see it as a beautiful thing. Just trees in the forest. They're all beautiful, even the ones which are dead and falling over. Which are damaged, crooked. As I like telling people, they're the most beautiful trees. My meditation, bent and crooked, is beautiful. And as soon as I look upon it as beautiful, you get all this pity sukha coming up. And as soon as you get pity sukha coming up, the mind just really starts to become really bright, stable and peaceful. It's only lack of peace because you're a fault finder. Because you're a fault finder, you control. The two go together. Because you control, you just cannot let go. You cannot stop doing things. So it's another way of learning how to let go. Stop fault finding. And you do that, and letting go happens. It has to. There's no other alternative where you stop finding fault. You let go. And when you let go, of course, I've taught time and time again, letting go is the key. Once you let go of control, and you become, just the mind becomes still all by itself. Ajahn Chah similarly put his hand up, waved it up and down. This is a leaf on a tree, it only moves because of the wind. Take the wind away, the leaf stops all by itself. Ajahn Chah similarly, I remember him doing that, it was very cute the way he did it. The meaning was just wonderful. And it meant that I didn't have to do anything. In fact, me doing things, that was what was making the leaf move. So I just had to let go. How do I let go? Stop finding fault. The leaf is moving too much. Leave it alone. If you think it's moving too much, if you think you're too many defilements in there, you're finding fault, it's never going to be peaceful. So stop finding fault with your beautiful mind. It's trying its best. Give it a break. Cut it some slack. And people say, I'm already cutting it some slack. No, you're not cutting it enough slack. You're still being too fault-finding. When you don't find fault at all, really don't find fault. Any sort of fantasies and stuff disappear. Fantasies is just a way of escaping from a world you don't like, a world you found fault with. So sometimes you have to sit there in your hut, in your cave, look at your mind, bleh. This is hopeless. Okay, let's get a fantasy up. Let's do something. Let's check the internet. Let's read a book. Why did that come? Where did that restlessness come from? From a lack of contentment. You look to your body or your mind. Bleh. So next time you look at it, same mind. So it's going, yeah. So it's good enough. It's not mine anyway. It's just doing its stuff. And I'm happy to have a mind like this. Just... as I, what I learned from the person who did the tiling in the ablution block, a guy called Pamuta. He taught me, he said, whenever you do any building, always remember, when it's finished, a blind man will be glad to see it, he used to say. And what a wonderful saying that is. So, you know, when you go to the hermit's house or the nun's cottage or Dhammasara or any other building you've done, remember that a blind man will be glad to see it. It's a beautiful non-fault finding. So even if it's a big mess, you know, a blind man will be glad to see it. Bit of positive. So anyway, just meditating. So when you're meditating, a crazy man will be glad to have your mind. Maybe. I don't know what your mind is like. But anyway, you might say, so a blind man would be glad to see it. A dead man would be glad to know this. If they're not dead. But anyway, you can actually see that positive mind, instead of fault finding, gives you contentment. And the contentment gives you peace. And that peace means the leaf isn't moving anymore. The wind has stopped. Which means everything calms down. And it becomes so still and so peaceful. And look, if you find fault with any of the people in this monastery, this is the cream of humanity. If you don't believe me, just go out there in the world, see what real people are like. And there's beautiful, really kind-hearted, high-minded people come into this monastery, and to Jhana Grove as well. You know, really wanting to do the right thing. They're not perfect, but as humanity goes, this is way up towards the top, what, 1% or 0.5% of humanity. So please respect one another. You've got faults, you're not perfect, like the trees here, but you're really pretty good. Very good. And then, Just respect yourself. You're one of those. And be at peace with yourself. And no fault finding. And then you meditate. You've got happiness. You've got peace. You've got contentment. And that is what leads to freedom. Fixing up faults in this monastery or in the world or in your own mind just leads to more agitation. I remember what I told you at the beginning of this retreat, meditation this afternoon in my cave, looking at my mind, you can see the main problem was agitation, because I was working and a bit tired and aching. You can see the mind agitated. And I was aware of that and say, okay, now I know the problem. I'm going to make peace with my agitated mind. Not find fault with it. Let it be, it's just cause and effect. Because I was working this morning. And just allow that agitation just to settle down. When I didn't find fault with it and try and control it and try and make it different, it became really, really peaceful. And with the agitated mind, it's like this lake, this sea on which all the thoughts were flowing like waves on the surface. When I dealt with the underlying reason, the agitation, and settle that, all the thoughts stop. You have peace and stillness, and that's beautiful. You really start to bliss out and have really great meditations. Because I wasn't fault-finding anymore. I let it be. And I can open the door of my heart to this moment. And as I say, that's kindness, that's love. And when you have kindness and love to anything, you have happiness. You smile at life and life smiles back at you. You find fault with her and she really sort of finds fault back at you. That's the nature of this world. So if you want to live a peaceful life, if you want to get deep meditation, the way to deep meditation, the way to a peaceful life are the same. If this is a peaceful monastery, it's only because we have peaceful meditation. If I'm a happy monk, it's only because I have happy meditation. It's just the two go together. If your samadhi's not right, you won't have any harmony. If your samadhi is right, harmony comes automatically. So that's the Dhamma teachings, mate. Very good.
Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagavan.
Pano Bhagavato Sāmi.